Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Brad Crowell joins us. He's the director of the Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, here for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Brad Crowell. He is director of the Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Great to have you back, sir.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So let me ask you this. Are we seeing a wholesale change in the way we're dealing with water in the Silver State? Is there just a whole change in attitude with this administration from previous administrations?
In large part, yes. We're taking a new approach. That being said, our ability to do things that are too novel or too innovative are still constrained by our law, which is pretty... It's been around for decades and doesn't give us a whole lot of tools or room for imagination, but we're trying to do what we can under existing statutes and regulations, and also engaging with the legislature and stakeholders to give our state engineer more tools to manage our water resources in a more modern manner with new techniques and recognizing new science and new data as we do it.
Okay, so that was a lot of stuff in one paragraph here. So let's dig in a little bit. What can you do before the legislature meets within the existing framework? What kind of things are you looking at?
Sure. So, well, let me say this. As a top-line kind of philosophy, in terms of the different way in which we look at appropriating and managing water in the state, we've adopted a what I call a quote, know before you grow strategy. So we need to know that the water resource is there now, will be there in a sustainable way into the future or for the life of the application we're looking at, and make a decision based on that not appropriate water, be it on paper or otherwise, that may be there in the short term but doesn't recognize long-term strains and challenges or conflicts. So we're much more responsible and careful about what we approve for water rights. And within that context, we're trying to use the tools we have related to mitigation and proof of beneficial use and things like that in a more steadfast way than it has been employed before. We don't, you know, generally if you haven't used your water, you can get extensions and extensions and extensions. I think those days, obviously with exception, need to be put behind us. We just simply don't have enough water to keep up with our growth to do things the way we've done it in the past. And you add on climate change on top of that, and it becomes an even more tricky scenario to work with.
Probably, without getting into the pipeline yet, the greatest example of overuse of a river was the Walker River, where, you know, it didn't matter how much water came in the wintertime, Walker Lake was never going to go up until Senator Reid started, you know, finding ways to buy back land from agriculture and put it in there. It was kind of like the movie The Producers, where failure was the only option rather than success. And if you had success, Walker Lake still didn't rise up. But we have seen an increase in water there. What kind of pushback are you getting on this at this point?
So we get pushback from everybody on all sides, which tells me we're doing something right. It doesn't mean that we have the answers necessarily, but we're trying to address a problem that is real and exists. And you know, the pushback we're getting is from the very stalwart, you know, first in time, first in right, senior water right holders, versus some of the more contemporary concerns that, at least in Nevada, that we've seen related to protecting our natural resources and protecting the environment. Those are starting to come in conflict, and then you add in development pressures on top of that, and there's just a lot of tug of war amongst different interests for what the water should be used for and what should take priority. And so we're trying to work with all those parties, and I will tell you quite candidly that they're very difficult discussions, but they're ones that have been avoided at some level in the past, and we're not avoiding it. We're digging right in with all these stakeholders. But finding solutions is going to be difficult, and anything that we come up with amongst the stakeholders is going to have to likely be approved by the legislature, and that's going to be another hurdle.
Okay, so, and obviously, I mean, water is the most legally contested issue anywhere in the country, and so no different here, obviously, in Nevada, especially being so arid. What would you say, and again, beyond the pipeline, we will get to that in a minute, has been the issue that where water was misappropriated, say, in the last 30 years?
So I don't know if I'm going to dodge your question a little bit and not necessarily cite specific instances where it's been misappropriated, but you can look at over-appropriation, which many of our basins are over-appropriated.
A better way of putting it, okay? Yes. Okay.
And then there's... And some of those basins, that's a problem that is over-appropriated, and in some of those basins it's not. The ones that it is are the ones that are over-appropriated and also over-pumped. And so that's where you're actually seeing an impact to the resource.
Which ones, for example?
So we have, of our 256 water basins, we have a few dozen that are also over-pumped, and I'm probably going to say the wrong ones here if I do that, but like out in... in Diamond Valley, that's one of those areas where there's strain on over-appropriation, over-pumping. Many places along the Humboldt River are basins that have those pressures. So,
where along the Humboldt, for example?
So,
because that's another area I want to talk to you about.
Yeah. So right now in the Humboldt, largely what we have is the junior groundwater right pumpers in the upper stretches of the Humboldt, impacting or quite possibly impacting senior water, surface water right holders downstream on the Humboldt near like Lovelock in Pershing County.
Okay, so you're talking about people like up around Mary's River or Elko, Carlin?
Yeah, so out that way, out east, you have junior water right holders using water that is most likely impacting the surface water right, senior surface water right holders in places like Pershing County around Lovelock.
Okay, so what about the mining industry? Because the mining industry has been pumping out water into the Humboldt River for decades, right? Are they in good stead with your department?
With regard to that, I mean, the big pressure on water from the Humboldt is irrigation, and what the mining industry is pumping into there from dewatering and other things like that. According to good water quality standards, pumping it back into the basins is de minimis compared to the agricultural use along that area.
So, explain de minimis.
It's not clean.
No.
It's the quantity of water that the mining industry may be helping pump back
enough into
the river is so small compared to how much water is being used for agricultural uses that it doesn't make a huge difference.
Okay, so one of the crazy things on the Humboldt River, on the tail end of it, is for agriculture, is flood irrigation. Mm-hmm. Is that still the way that land is being irrigated? Because I haven't done stories on that in probably 30 years, but is it still flood irrigation?
Flood irrigation happens in so many parts of Nevada, and it still does, and in certain instances it is appropriate, but I think in many instances we can do it in a way more water efficient way, and that's what one of the things we're going to look to push during this next legislative session is some innovative ways to use agricultural irrigation water more smartly. The kicker is that agriculture producers generally aren't opposed to it, but it does. There's an upfront cost, and
sure.
so finding that a way to minimize or eliminate the upfront cost so that those new water technologies can be developed is probably the ticket.
Okay, so I mean, on a really large scale, you can look at the LA Basin and see what floodwaters do there. I mean, it's billions of gallons of water that go out into the ocean that could mm-hmm. be captured. Are you looking at some kind of capture? And if so, who would pay for that?
There is aquifer storage proposals out there and some that have been approved in Nevada previously. There's a big one I think you're referring to.
I'm getting towards that. I was thinking more at this point, you know, the flood irrigation, at the Lovelock end of this. But yes, there's a company that would like to be able to take the flood irrigation in near the Winnemucca area, store that, and then resell that down the road. What are your thoughts on that?
That is one of those. I mean, we're looking at that application right now, and the state engineer hasn't made a decision on it yet, so I can't speak to it too much. But I would say that it is one of those innovative ideas that have been born out of the fact that more water is needed out there. Our supply is obviously limited and probably decreasing even, you know, as we speak, as our population continues to increase. And so, you know, this aquifer storage could be one way to do it, but it is based on the most junior rights, and that aquifer would only build up reserves in heavy flood years, heavy water years, which there may or may not be more of going forward.
This is private investment. This is a company
right.
that's actually looking at it and saying, we'll put up the money,
mm-hmm.
we'll store the water. And in a way, it appears to me, and I'm not an engineer, so you can correct me mm-hmm. if I'm wrong, but it seems like recreating deep geologic water, which is what we have over in eastern Nevada,
mm-hmm.
Where it's water that's percolated down over the millennia, and then it's a one-time use. I mean, it could be a long, long one-time use, but it's a one-time use thing. It's not going to be recharging forever. Mm-hmm. But this company thinks that they can make money doing this.
And if the economics work for them, and we see the proposal as having, you know, being sound from an engineering and hydrology and quantity perspective, it's, you know, probably something that could be supported. But again, it's not going to be our salvation necessarily, because if you approve that project and it happens to coincide with a 20-year drought, that aquifer is never going to fill, and you're not going to have those promised deliveries or make the economics work in that period of time. So there's a lot of uncertainties. It's a bit of a gamble, but it's one of those things that under our current water law, people are getting very novel and innovative in their proposals.
Right, but I mean, if it's private industry, isn't it? It's their risk.
It is, but again, there's people that may be relying on that water, and if we build up development or proposed new development based on water being there that doesn't show up, what are we going to do? Are we going to turn people's taps off?
We live in a desert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived in Marin County when we had 35 gallons of water mm-hmm. a day. That was in 1977. So, I mean, I know what it's like when the water gets essentially turned off. Mm-hmm. It's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll come back with much more after this timeout.
Safety. We all think about it. You think about it when he buckles in, when you check your mirrors and put away your phone. RTC thinks about safety too. In fact, we create it. Center turn lanes mean fewer blind spots. Bike lanes keep cyclists and you safe. Roundabouts reduce injury collisions. And all these crosswalks are designed to keep families like yours safe. Safety is your priority, and it's ours too. Every day, in everything we do.
Because of UMC, there's a wide open road ahead of me.
Because of UMC, she can grow up with her twin sister.
Because of UMC, I'm here to help you.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, Go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Brad Kroll. He's director of the Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. So there's been a lot of excitement in the environmental community that, and I'm putting this in quotes, the Southern Nevada Water Authority pipeline project is dead. And the thing I should probably point out is that in their plan, this was 50 years down the road as far as their plan goes. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
They still retain the ranches that they purchased that have the water rights, and they are still running cows and cattle on that land. Do you think that as long as they continue to own those ranches and there's cattle on the land, that at some point in the distant future, this pipeline project could come back?
No, and I'll tell you why. So they still own those ranches and the associated water rights. I mean, right now those rights are irrigation rights, so they'd have to have requests for them to be switched for manner of use. But they also had applied for a huge amount of other water rights beyond just what was on the ranches that they owned, and that was the bulk of the water that they were going to use in that pipeline. So without, and they have since withdrawn those applications associated with the rights that didn't belong with the ranches that they own. So they would have to reapply and have those awarded before they could do a pipeline of any quantity that would be worth building it from the north down to the south. I think that the idea is dead for the foreseeable future.
And that's a very important phrase you just used there.
Dead or foreseeable future?
Dead for the foreseeable future, because that doesn't mean it's dead permanently. It just means it's dead for the foreseeable future. And the reason I'm saying that is that, you know, this is inherently as much a political issue as it is a water issue. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking 50 years out, you know, none of the people who are in charge, I mean, I ain't going to be here in 50 years. I mean, sadly, I would like to still be hosting Nevada Newsmakers in 50 years, but I would be having to do it from 6 feet below. And I don't think anybody who is in the political world's career would still be going on 50 years from now. So,
well, if you and I are both here in 50 years, I will promise to come on the show and talk to you about it. If my voice is of any value at that point.
Our grandchildren, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So I think that the bigger issue, Sam, is in the foreseeable future, so that we don't recreate the past, you know, in 30, 40, 50 years from now with proposals that may not have been suited for today and probably wouldn't be suited for tomorrow, is we need to look at the fact that we have two water management systems in Nevada that are, because of our growth and because of the pressures of climate change and other upstate, Colorado River Basin users are starting to converge. You have, in Nevada, you have the state engineer, which manages all the ground and surface water in the entire state, with the exception of the Colorado River. And that was an okay dynamic in the past because Colorado, Las Vegas and Clark County largely relied on the Colorado River for water, and then you managed the rest of the state with the balance of the ground and surface water. Obviously, with the pipeline proposal, that was a recognition by Southern Nevada Water Authority that they're going to need water beyond what is available from the river or the ground and surface waters within Clark County. And so if we're going to grant that it's true that there is going to be reliance in Clark County on ground and surface water in other parts of the state, then we need to manage it in a more coordinated fashion so that the state engineer is not walled out from what's going on the Colorado River, and those who manage the Colorado River for Nevada are not necessarily walled off from the state engineer, so that we're looking at it as a whole rather than in two bifurcated governance pieces.
All right, so at this point in time then, there is no coordination between the State Water Engineer's Office and the Colorado Commission?
Correct.
And you were talking about, and of course we're running out of time, of course, when you were talking about looking at legislation for the next legislative session, can you briefly tell us, you know, maybe the top three things you'd like to accomplish?
I don't want to do that with you today because I.
Can you give us one?
Sure. So looking at the baseline thing, the biggest thing I want to do, and this is not a policy thing, but this is a money thing I need from the legislature, which is not the greatest time to do this, but we need financial support to do a independent statewide inventory of what our surface and groundwater basins look like and calculate within that what the impacts of climate change could mean. And without that baseline data, it's really hard to make sound decisions with regard to water right applications and things like that across the state. So I really want our policies to be dictated on good data and good science, and we don't have that yet, and we need that as a starting point.
And how much money do you think that's going to cost? What are you asking for?
I don't have an ask yet, but it's to do it well, it's probably $1 million.
$1 million, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a huge amount by comparison with some of the numbers that are being thrown around these days. And we'll see what comes back from the federal government. Let's take another break. We'll come back. We'll have time for a couple of other quick questions here. And then please come back again, because I got like 5 pages of questions.
Happy to, Sam.
We'll be right back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Are you a homeowner who's interested in remodeling or building a home? At Design Outdoor, we can show you how adding natural or manufactured masonry stone can add beauty and value to your home. And we refer only the best contractors. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
Hey guys, are you watching the game at a friend's or the bar again because you can't watch at home with your wife? Or worse, because she kicked you out and kept your couch, your flat screen, and your kids? What's the one thing a man needs when he loses a good woman? A good lawyer. And when he loses a bad woman, he needs a great lawyer. What makes a good woman a bad woman? You tell me. You're the one that can't watch the game in your own home. I'm men's rights attorney Marilyn York, and I represent men in divorce, custody, and family law matters.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. And a lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Brad Kroll. He is the director of the Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. He has already agreed to come back and visit with us again because we have so much more to talk about. But I wanted to ask you something that's fairly topical, which is the Ioneer lithium mine that they're trying to put in near Tonopah. At this point, Team's buckwheat has become a huge topic. Because the only place it grows, and it is just one version of buckwheat. There are lots of different versions of buckwheat, but its natural environment is right there near the mine. What are your thoughts on that being listed as an endangered species? And would that kill the mine project, which they've already spent $80 million on?
So, we're going through a process right now under the state endangered flora statutes, to determine whether it should be listed as a state-protected species. And so that process is literally, we're in the middle of it right now. We had to delay some of those workshops due to COVID, but we held them in the past few weeks, and we're going to have one more that's focused on the small business impact part of it. That will conclude sometime before the end of the year. However, that would mean we'd only have a temporary regulation if we decide to move forward with one until the end of the next legislative session. You know, it's a pretty rare plant on some unique geology. Whether it's going to be listed is, it looks very plausible at this point. The bigger question is whether you could mitigate for the impacts of the mining project such that you don't undermine the success of the species.
Are you comfortable with the project that Ioneer has funded with UNR that have propagated a lot of these plants and are, and I've talked to Jerry Team, who mm-hmm. this yep. buckwheat is named for, and Jerry says, yes, this is a unique environment. So, I mean, there's no argument about that. That's why this particular version of the plant grows there. This was a very recent discovery by Patrick Donnelly's Center for Biological Diversity, And it just seems, and I've had this conversation with Mr. Donnelly on the program, that this was, you know, a reason to stop the lithium mine rather than, you know, necessarily the protection of the plant.
And that may have been their intent. I'll leave it to them to answer that question. But it's also notable that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced just this past week that they are going to begin their 12-month review process to determine if a listing is warranted. And that likely got kickstarted because the state was doing its own process. And, you know, while the Federal Endangered Species Act has timelines, they're rarely met. So I think the state process will still be ahead of that timeline, but it's going to be instructive to see two parallel processes going forward that are looking at two similar sets of data to come to an outcome. And again, I think the big question is whether you can mitigate the impact to the species and whether it can be propagated. And UNR is going to be looking at that. It's fine that they're doing that, but it also means that we have to keep that in mind when UNR provides input into our scientific review process, that they've been retained by one of the interested parties.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Sam.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Penny! Dad? What are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this. Wow! This stuff is great! People are gonna love it!
Yes. Yes, they were.
As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
You can now watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Nevada Newsmakers and become a subscriber. We'll see you on the next broadcast. Thanks for watching and listening.